Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
So for the benefit of our listeners, we today are talking about retroactive child support, or to be more precise, how far back can somebody go to either ask for child support or ask for the past child support to have been increased, or ask for the child support that was billed to be reduced and potentially having the arrears expunged. And that is what we're going to talk about today. Now, I wish I could say to you, that's old news, but it's not old news because the subject has actually received widespread attention by the courts all over Canada. And just as a side note, as a bit of a civics course for our Canadian listeners, in Canada, we have different provinces and territories. Within each province and territory, we have what are called trial level courts. And then if a trial judge makes a mistake, at least if a person believes a trial judge makes a mistake, they could take it to their provincial court of appeal. And in Ontario, we have the Ontario Court of Appeal at Queen and University. And if a person still thinks that the three judges of the Ontario Court of Appeal or the British Columbia Court of Appeal make a mistake, then they could ask for the Supreme Court of Canada in Ottawa to examine the record to determine if there was a mistake made not only at the trial level, but at the provincial court of appeal level. And the subject of retroactive child support received twice in the last 5 years the attention of the Supreme Court of Canada in two cases. And our viewers can certainly Google them or go on to canley.org and find the two cases, namely Michelle versus Graydon, M-I-C-H-E-L. Graydon, G-A-G-R-A-Y-D-O-N, and the other case of 2021 in Colucci and Colucci, C-O-L-U-C-C-I. Both of those cases touched upon the subject of retroactive child support, and I will tell you a little bit about the principles that emanate from those two decisions, because the fact of the matter is, it has been confusing, and it has been somewhat of a patchwork of both statutory law and case law all over Canada, and some of it has conflicted because there were earlier cases that had been misinterpreted. Specifically, the DBS case was a case of about 10 plus years ago where the Supreme Court of Canada said in passing that if there is a amount that somebody wants in retroactive child support, they cannot go past 3 years back in time. And they talked about the subject of notice. In other words, was there notice? When was the notice that the person wanted to either pay more or pay less? Or if the person wanted the person who's paying to pay more or the person that was supposed to be paying should be paying less? You can go back 3 years. That was under DBS. And then there was another thing that DBS said. DBS also said that there is this thing called blameworthy conduct. And whatever that meant allowed the person that wants to go back earlier than 3 years to get it to go back longer. And then there was another factor that was brought up in DBS, which is you can't come to court and ask for a retroactive child support once the kid is no longer a child under the entitlement provisions for child support. So for example, somebody that comes to court when the child is 19, can they go back and go, well, he never paid child support for the last 5 years, so I want child support from ages, say, 15 to 18. So that was DBS, and along comes Colucci and Michelle and Graydon that dispel some myths. And some of the premises are, first of all, the presumptive period going back is 3 years, but the 3 years could be even earlier if there was either a court order or a separation agreement that provided for an obligation to provide annual financial disclosure and the person didn't do that. And so then the court can go back earlier than 3 years. And then, of course, if a person lied, cheated, deceived, or, this is where it gets interesting, created a situation where the person that's entitled to it is so afraid to ask for it that they chose not to, then the judge can go backwards way more than 3 years. And in some cases, the judge can go back 10, 15, 18 years. The law allows that. So another thing that came out is this notion about asking for child support for children that are no longer children when you ask for it. And the answer to that is no. If a child is 20 years old, but somebody didn't pay child support from ages 15 to 18, the person that's entitled to claim it can go back. And so there are so many amazing principles. But what I find most interesting, and I'm going to pass this over to you, Leanne, feel free to comment on, is the Supreme Court of Canada, as everybody knows, doesn't just say, this is the law. It explains the sociological norms, the evolution of values, the policy provisions, the underlying goals of the legislation. And they use various words, which I find very interesting. And obviously, these words resonate with lawyers all over Canada. So for example, the word of informational asymmetry. What does that even mean? I know what the word information means. I know what symmetry means, but what does informational asymmetry mean? And what it means is, in order to establish why a person who's entitled to child support can come out of the woodwork and ask for 5, 10, 15 years of child support, it's because of informational asymmetry. The Supreme Court of Canada says the person that should have paid it should know that they had a child, should know that there are laws regarding child support, and should know what their income is, and therefore know what they should have paid. The fact that they didn't pay it is unfair to the recipient because of informational asymmetry. And that was their explanation for why they feel, and the law now is, that a recipient of child support can go back in time. And the notion of why is it that a person that pays it can not go back in time to have what they either paid or what they were billed but didn't pay reduced, is because informational asymmetry again. And so some people have said, that's not fair. Why could, if the children live with the mother, why could the mother go back 5 years, but the father can't go back 6 months? That doesn't seem fair. And they explain it. And of course, I'm never going to do as good of a job as the Supreme Court of Canada did, but they explained that the person that's paying it, they're in control of the money. They're in control of the knowledge. They're in control of process. And if they don't use those controls to set the record straight, we're not going to order the person that received it or believe they should have received it to pay it back. They should have acted on it. And that's where the concept of notice or effective notice comes in. And they go so far as to say, it's not just enough to shoot an email or a text that says, oh, by the way, I lost my job and I can't afford to pay child support, or I got demoted and my support amount should be lowered. And then just rely on that email. And then 3 years later, come forward and say, I want it reduced or I want it expunged. You actually have to provide the data and the evidence to go with it. Like, here's my record of employment. As you can see, I lost my job. Here's the letter of termination. As you can see, I lost my job. Here are my annual tax returns. As you can see, my income has gone down or gone to zero. You actually have to come forward with the documents and the evidence to be able to then say, I shared it with her or I shared it with him ages ago, and they still collected the money or garnished my income or created the arrears that should never have been created because the other side actually knew that I didn't have the money to pay it. And that is where the Supreme Court of Canada tries to establish fairness. In fact, it's a really good read if anybody is interested in trying, because somebody could say to me, what's the connection between morality and child support? That's a hard question to answer. But the Supreme Court of Canada draws a nexus between morality, in other words, what are Canadian moral values on the subject of child support? So that's my spiel.
Well, and I think it's really important for listeners to understand that the Supreme Court of Canada said that child support is the right of the child. So it's not, you know, my right as mom or dad's right as dad to decide, you know, what child support somebody is entitled to and to waive it. You know, child support is one of the sort of golden things in family law, in that, you know, the federal government even created the federal child support guidelines to ensure that it's, you know, as clear as possible, although even sometimes there's argument over amounts there, but it's, you know, as clear as possible what child support should be. And so that's why, you know, I think in these cases, the court has held that it's willing to go back many, many, many years because it is the right of the child. And so I've seen cases where, you know, somebody has adult children at this point in time, and they realize that the payor was earning more money than they had realized during all those years when he or she was supposed to be paying child support. And because they didn't exchange income tax returns and notices of assessment, the recipient didn't discover this until the children were much older. And that person is able to successfully go after that money. I had a case actually where it was exactly that type of situation where the children were now in their 20s. And they were out of school, they were, you know, adults. And the mom realized, dad bought a Porsche, and that really irritated the mom. And she started thinking, okay, maybe he has more money than I realized, and maybe he was earning more money than I realized all these years. So she, you know, initiated an application. And she ended up being awarded around $500,000 wow. in retroactive child support. And this client came to me after that judgment was already rendered, wanting to know if there were any grounds of appeal, and you know, there weren't. It was just interesting because he's like, the kids are growing. Like, they're not even going to get the benefit of this money. And yet I now have to pay $500,000 in retroactive child support. And so, you know, in his case, I think the moral of the story was not to flaunt your wealth, by buying that Porsche, because, that's what really triggered the ex-wife. But I mean, certainly what he was doing was wrong. He should be on top of things. And I think sometimes as family lawyers, we may forget to remind clients when people initially come to us and we're drafting separation agreements and just getting agreements on child support, it's really important, I think, that our clients understand the importance of exchanging those income tax returns and notices of assessment every year and, you know, being very transparent about their income, because it can come back to haunt them. And, you know, it's much easier to pay something, you know, on a monthly basis consistently over time that you're required to pay than to not pay what you should be paying and then suddenly be like that client I was just mentioning, and you have to come up with $500,000 to pay in retroactive child support
in after tax dollars.
Exactly. And you know, in his case, he had the family responsibility office going after him. He was in a real predicament, and you know, he only had himself to blame. I'm not saying anyone should be sympathetic to his situation, but you just don't want to find yourself in that type of situation. And I think a lot of people out there don't understand that ongoing obligation, because I do have quite a few people come through my door as clients who are owed money, quite frankly, because the incomes have changed. And the child support they were being paid was based on an out-of-date income from the payor, and they're owed quite a bit of money. And these cases I always think is I like to be the lawyer on those cases, because your client is in such a strong position when they are owed, you know, child support because they didn't know what the other party's income was.
So let's turn the tables a little bit and speak a little in favor of the payors, which often are men, but sometimes are women as well. And just so that we're clear, the subject of payor means the person that pays child support to the other parent. And those, and there are many cases where the kids live equally with both parents, but because there's a differential in income, there might still be an amount paid by one parent to the other. So I'm referring to all situations where money goes from one parent to the other, whether it's because of the children living primarily with one parent or the children living equally with each parent, or there being some sort of other permutation to that. In a situation where you're the payor, if you haven't yet separated or finalized your separation and divorce, make sure that there's really good language in the agreement or in the court order that deals with disclosure, the annual change in child support, and the termination. I'll say those three things again. One, the annual exchange of financial information, what it is, when it is. Number two, how it is to be changed. Three, when it finishes. If the agreement or order has not yet been concluded, make sure those three things are in it. If it has been concluded, review it to find out what the answer to those three things are. And then, if it's to your advantage, invoke it. If it's to your disadvantage, get legal advice. Because you might say, well, it says here I got to give financial disclosure. And after I give it, it says here we have to go to a mediator. And it says here that it doesn't end until the kids are 24. And you're thinking, I made more money since then. I'm just going to lay low. And I'm not going to do anything because I'm paying much less. Big mistake. At minimum, get a legal opinion on what might happen by doing that and what might happen if you don't do that. Maybe the solution is to redo the agreement, and the new agreement will stipulate that the amount that you pay is fixed, non-variable, with no financial disclosure, because now the kids are 3 or 4 or 5 years older, and that's a new deal that you could strike. So that is for people that haven't yet finished or for people that have finished. If you're the recipient, don't rely on what we just said. Don't sit back, sit on your hands, and don't pursue an increase or a variation. And also, don't collect money that you know you should not be collecting because the other person's not earning or because their income has gone down, because there is still the risk that you're going to have to pay that back, or not pay it back, but you might end up having that serve as a credit for future payments that are owed to you when you think you're going to get those future payments. So a few tips are, if you haven't yet completed your agreement, complete it properly with good legal advice and with good provision. If you already have one, review it and get legal advice. And if there are changes, whether on the pay side or on the recipient side or on the parenting side, because circumstances have changed and the kids aren't living under that arrangement anymore, get legal advice on how this impacts child support. Because like Leanne said, the courts and the governments don't dicker around with child support. They can pull your driver's license, they could pull your passport, they can garnish your assets, they could freeze your bank accounts, they can register writs on you, and they can take it out of your real estate. So take it seriously, because it's a serious issue, and if it wasn't so serious, the Supreme Court of Canada wouldn't have touched it twice in the last 5 years.
Great advice, and thanks to you for joining us when you're at an airport. It's not probably the best environment to focus on a live, so thanks for doing that. And we will be back here again next week with a new topic.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.